Hi, I'm Mark Wade, and you're here listening to 15 Minutes with Mark Wade. I'm here with...
Daphna.
And Ian.
And today we are here to talk about my love-hate relationship with my intimate comic book knowledge. So, something I was thinking about last week. So, we went to Meltdown Comics, Sunset Boulevard, who represent, and they had an event where Clive Barker was interviewing Grant Morrison. And so we all went as a group, as a little outing. We do this from time to time. We have our little field trips. Everybody has a buddy system, and we pin notes to everybody's tunic so they'll know which card to be in and stuff. Permission slips from their parents, exactly. So we went out for this. And, of course, I showed up early because I was there to hang out with Grant early and talk about his stuff and so forth and so on. So Grant knows I'm in the audience. So we're sitting there, and at some point Grant starts talking about the division between Earth 1 and Earth 2, the parallel Earths in the DC Universe, and how, you know, there weren't parallel universe in comics, and then somewhere in The Flash there was a mention of a parallel Earth, and it was created sometime, and he couldn't remember when, and he looks out in the audience and he goes, I don't remember what comic that was. Does anybody know? And there was that horrible, torn moment for me of, I know, but I don't want to be your trained monkey. This is not... And yet the compulsion to speak was still there. So it was like this little war in my brain. Because it's not only... I mean, not only could I tell him it was Flash 123, but I knew it was August 1961. And I knew And at some point he says, what was the date? I said, and I wanted to say it was July 14th, because that's the date on the newspaper on page 3 of the story. But
you're like, in the store, actual publication day.
I was torn because I'm glad that I know this stuff, but I don't really understand why I have a love-hate relationship with it. I should embrace the fact that I know this stuff.
It gets you paid.
That's right, you have made a career out of it.
But no, I'd like to think I've made a career actually out of...
Well, yeah.
Oh, okay, no, we did not mean it that way.
That's, I mean, yes, that's, yes.
That's a given.
I'm not a freak show.
It's a Mari episode.
I'm glad I know this stuff. It's fun to know all this stuff. It's fun to know Superman's social security number, and the date on the penny in the Batcave, but I don't want that to be the thing that's carved on my tombstone.
Don't you think, like, it's back to that discussion we had 3 weeks ago with the tip of the iceberg. You have all this fact and knowledge at your disposal. It's what you choose to show. It's the tip of the iceberg. It's
the psychological question put to the audience is why there's a mixed emotion in that moment. Why there is that sort of, I'm among my friends. I'm among my peers. I'm there.
You're in a comic store.
I'm in a comic store. It's not like I'm at a funeral. It's not like I'm taking final for my physics exam. It's like it's an appropriate time to mention that it's Flash 123 and it's 1961. But I don't know why.
If you were a doctor on a plane and someone was having a heart attack, would you be ashamed for saving their life?
There was this guy just yesterday. The news story was about this 747, I think it's 747 or 767, that was having mechanical difficulties. And it was going to be an 8-hour delay. And a guy stood up in the back and was like, I'm an engineer who's qualified to work on this stuff. And luckily, they vetted him real quickly. They made sure that he was not just some lunatic with a staple gun.
I'm going to try that next time.
I know, exactly. And sure enough, once they vetted him, he sat down, and 5 minutes later, he's got the plane running again, and they managed to get to their destination by, and they were like 13 minutes late or something like that. So, yes. There's exactly, if I were a doctor, if I were a surgeon and I were able to stand up and go, I know what to do about that trachea, then I should be proud of that. But
metaphor's totally apt.
I think the metaphor's totally apt because it's all life and death. I think that some of my reticence has to do with the fact that even though we are, it's funny, it's the knowledge that we're talking about is what binds us together as a community in comic book people, but it also is knowledge that separates us from most of the rest of humanity. as I found out on many a blind date.
I mean, it depends. It's I mean, like you said, it's what defines the limits of our community. But It's also the currency. Like, it's how you participate in the conversation. Is if you
if
have
it were the currency, I would be the richest man in comics. But it's not. So currency, I'm not sure is the right.
Well, no, but you're the richest man of information in comics. That's... So it's totally works.
Totally works. I don't know. I'm not.
Why would you feel shame? I mean, you're in a comic store. You're talking to a comic creator. Mm-hmm. You're a comic creator yourself. You're not just a fan, you're also an originator for a lot of the canon for other people. Why? Are you Jewish?
I know.
I'm speaking this, you know, as the tribe. We've got an application. It's a nominal fee.
Great, excellent. I don't know. It's funny, because conversely, the best time I had at the Heroes Convention 2 weeks ago was my little card trick that I play. Which is that when somebody comes by with a big pile of DC comics from the 1960s that they bought, I like being able to just have them hold them up from 200 yards and be able to go, oh, that's Superman 214, and that's Batman 8.
That's more of an eyesight test.
No, it's because there were points at which you can ask Neil. Neil was freaking out. Neil was losing his mind when he was watching me peel off a 32nd of an inch of a cover, and I could just look and see, oh, that's from Action Comics 337. And
Neil's our publishing director.
And also highly excitable, by the way.
Highly excitable, and there you go. So, but it was, you know, that I was enjoying, but I think that was more like...
But see, that's fun. You're creating fun.
I'm creating fun, and I'm also, that's like doing a card trick. That's like, that's better.
What's wrong with doing a card trick?
It's better than doing a card trick. There are two ways to do a card trick. There's the way of, hey, look, there's a deck of cards. I'm going to pick this up and do a trick. Uh-huh. And there's the more pathetic way, which, by the way, I did all through my early 20s when I studied magic, of carrying a deck of cards around with you at all times and being able to say, hey, do you want to see a more card trick? No, it doesn't come up naturally in conversation. So I think that's some of it.
So creepy. I'm starting to get the shame part of your cycle right now, because it's just like you go up to some random, hey... You want to see a card trick? Look, you then open your jacket.
You've got a deck.
They don't even see your card deck. You're just reaching.
I know.
You want to bring magic into their lives. I don't see what's wrong with that. Man. I've had people randomly ask me if I want to see a magic trick. I always tell them yes, because why not?
You never know. You never know what you're
going
to see.
Am I going into another dimension? I mean, what kind of magic are we talking about here, sir? I've never seen like that before.
If Grant Morrison asks you if you want to see a magic trick, say yes.
It's going to be the name of the podcast.
People, I know. When a stranger
asks you... Do you want to see a magic trick? Say yes.
Say yeah. Well, if it's Grant, you know, again, you'll end up in another plane of existence. It'll be great. I don't know. I don't know what this, again, I don't know what the root of this love-hate thing is, because I know all this stuff, and I get, and again, it's...
It's not like you sat with flashcards and tested yourself. It came out of...
yes and no.
Oh, I mean, you did?
Well, not yesterday, but when I was a kid, the process was... First, when I was a kid, we moved like every 8 weeks. We moved like whenever the rent was due. So it, like, the comics were the things I carried around from place to place. I went to 13 different grade schools in 10 years. So... I'm not crying out for sympathy. I'm just saying that connections were not easily...
Sandy hears my heart breaking.
So the connections were not easy to make, so you make the connections with the comic books. And so my routine was I would read every comic when it came out, and then I would read it again before I filed it away. I always read them twice.
Yeah.
And then I would take out a little index card, and I would do a little catalog of the comics, like a little catalog that you'd have at the library, where I would list the name of the story and the number of pages and the artist and stuff, and put it on a little file card and keep
it in
a little file box.
Did you also do? It's funny. I read a Josh Neufeld autobiographical comic where he did that, but he always rated the comic and he looked back and said, "Oh, I like Thor more than Teen Titans."
Do you understand? At the stage in my life at which I was doing this, all comics were great.
They were all tens.
They were all tens. There's no, you know, I had no qualitative.
It wasn't even a scale. Is it a comic or isn't it?
Exactly. Did I spend 15 cents for this? Then it's worth every penny. So, and then I got into this, and I still have these at home, by the way. I went through this period where I wanted to collect all the information on the characters, and so what I would do is I would read all the old comics I could get my hands on. I would go to the library and check out books. And I built this card file of every superhero in existence.
Your own secret file?
A little secret file. I did, it was Who's Who and Secret Files long before they actually existed. This is 1972, 1973. And I made a giant, like, huge box of every DC character and every Marvel character and every other character got a little file card, and on it was their name and their real name and their first appearance and their origin, and I wrote it all out in a little tiny, you know, 12-year-old handwriting. And
well, wait, Mark, that's great. I mean, you, for people who don't know, you eventually became the editor of Secret Origins
and yet, at DC. And at Who's and Who's Who. So, yeah. So I guess I did make a career out of it. But I guess that in that sense, because it's not flashcards, but it's still sort of imprinting. I mean, you write this stuff mm-hmm. out.
Well, and you seek out the information, so you have to process it.
And yeah, and to this day, there's nothing that, you know, there's no piece of DC or Marvel Comics information that you can throw at me that I didn't know that I'm not excited about. I don't know. So
does it?
Wait, who knows more? You or Kurt Busch?
It depends. Kurt knows more. Kurt actually knows a little bit more about Marvel.
Uh-huh.
Because you should have a info.
Did you write in? Because I know in old comics you can only find letters from Kurt in them. Do you have?
I have a few okay. here and there. They're very scattered. There's like four or five, and okay. they may as well. I think they're all written in crayon. They're all kind of sad. So, and there's nothing in them that would bespeak any sort of gift for actual fiction writing. So. I don't know. But that's... No, Kurt knows more about the Marvel stuff by a hair. But I nobody knows more about the DC stuff than I do. And the ancillary stuff. And the weird Heroes of the 40s. And the weird Heroes of the Golden Age. And the weird off-brand publishers and stuff. It's just... I just immerse myself in this. It will eventually pay off.
Well, that's another question I have. Like, knowing this info, knowing the canon... And the fanon and all the weird little spaces in between that fall off of, you know, recent memory. Does it stop you from writing stories? Because it might conflict, or you want to make everything make sense on the same continuum of a character?
I've given up on that altogether. I mean, I gave up on it long after DC gave up on it. I just kind of gave up on it. Because clearly, there's no... I mean, when I talk about continuity... I know I'm speaking like a reformed smoker, where I think continuity is overrated. I think that it's nice if you have that consistency and nothing. And again, it's nice to have characters that have that sort of consistent history. But we've broken that so many times in the last 20 years that nobody, no established comic book character has a consistent history that spans the length of time. And there's always breakages and stuff. And it's just that's the nature of the fact that you've had these stories written by dozens and dozens and dozens of different people and dozens of different editors, and, you know, there's no central oversight to it. And we keep rebooting the stuff anyway in the DC and Marvel universe, or at least in the DC universe. So, you know, the fact that I know all this stuff about Krypton means nothing, because that's not Krypton anymore.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, because when you say reboot, it's literally something, an event that happens within the story. It's not saying, like what they did with Ultimates, where they say this is a completely different series.
Right.
They create an event that reboots it.
Right.
So that becomes almost like, it's true up until
that point.
Up until that universe was destroyed.
Right, but then it becomes somebody else to come in and put in a new quote-unquote truth. And then after 10 or 12 years or 15 years, that becomes the accepted truth or the accepted continuity or the accepted backstory or whatever. And then we'll go pave over that again at some point. So it's, I don't know. That's just the natural life cycle of comics, apparently. There was a point in 1985... when I knew more about the Legion of Superheroes than any human being alive, because I was doing an index.
Because
I killed them all and stole their secrets. Because I was doing an index for Eclipse Comics, which at that time was doing those official index to the DC books. They did an official index to Justice League, an official index to Legion, a bunch of other. And I did the Legion one. And what that involved was, in retrospect, one of the happiest months of my life, where I just got up every morning. I dug through old Legion comics, I made notes on the characters and where they appeared last and where they appeared next and what their histories were, and kept track of all the continuity, and then I went to bed and I got up the next day and I did the same thing.
I just described the Ian Brill dream job.
I know, and I did that for
Ian
like,
Brill and Grant McMillan dream job, like, I should give a shout out to Grant, but yes, that is, oh my god.
That was like 1 month of my life in 1985 or 86 or whatever it was the greatest month. But you can't do that now, because there's nothing that has that sort of unbroken continuity to it.
Well, do you also think that so much of that information's been compiled and is available online? Like, I don't have to track down those old comics or go through the old stuff, because I can go to the Wikipedia and someone else did the work, or a lot of people did that work to together, so not one person needs to know everything now.
Yeah, but that level of detail, it still doesn't really exist out there. Like that, I mean, I know just the other day, I was trying to figure out what Peter Parker's eye color was, and I was trying to figure out what, and I had to know what the address of the Daily Bugle building was, and it wasn't, there wasn't like a one button thing you could hit. You couldn't just go to Wikipedia and find this stuff out. You have to, and there's conflicting sources. There is, that's the, again, that's the thing about continuity. It just, there is no such thing as continuity anymore, or at least there's not a consistency to it. So
they don't have a thing for his eye color? I think that would be like a style guide.
You would think so, and yet, you know, I didn't actually have one at hand, so I did the next best thing. I went online. I mean, we're way off topic now, but yeah. Whatever the topic was, but when I was doing the origin pieces in the back of 52, when I was doing all this DC Heroes two pages at a time, I'm the one who decided on that format, and I'm the one who also said, I don't see any point in doing listing first appearances or characters' hair color or their weight or their vital stats and stuff, because all that stuff really is online. This is this what we were doing. You know, originally what they said was we want text pieces. I said, there's no point. There's no point in doing that anymore.
I mean, Wikipedia is all text pieces. Yeah,
exactly. People are doing that. People have been doing that consistently now on the web for 10 years. Why don't we do what we do well, which is comics?
Yeah.
So, what were we talking about?
Oh, we were talking about comics.
Putting that into good use and not feeling bad about it.
And not feeling bad about it.
Yeah, we're done.
Oh, man. All right, well, I guess that's been 15 minutes in psychotherapy with Mark Wade.
That's right.
That was Mark Wade.
With Dr. Plugin and Brill.
Wait, all right.
Finally, our parents are happy.
All right, I'll make an appointment to see you next week. Same time, and see you then.
Bye.